We have just about 11, just about 4 verses to go. 4 or 5 verses. But because we plan to, in addition to let early Christians speak, as we are looking since last week, we are going to let some commentators, theologians, comment on the subject, not this week. But we're definitely going to probably spend 1 week, hopefully not more than 1 week, on that. And it is for this reason that wherever we reach tonight on the let history and or early Christians speak, we may stop there. I'm hoping that we can have read or quote as much of the writing of these ancient and early Christian writers on the subject of head covering as we can. We solicit your input and sharing your knowledge on the subject under consideration. I think last week we ended, was it, with Tertullian? Brother Simit was just telling me that he had gone to look up some of the characters that I mentioned last week, and he found what he found on Tertullian quite interesting. It was Tertullian, Brother Smith, wasn't it, Tertullian? And from what Brother Smith was saying, it seems if Tertullian tried to start a church and what. But he was a great character from Africa, and Tertullian lived 160 to 230 AD. It simply means that at 160 AD, Tertullian would have met Christians who no doubt know at least John, the writer of Revelation. We are looking on what early Christian say to us on the subject of head covering. We are looking on the fact that whether or not there is a unbroken chain of speakers, writers down through the ages from the first century, the time of the apostles, down to our times, speaking on this subject through their writings, so that we can understand that head covering for women and no covering for men was something that early Christians believed in and practiced down through the ages. Or we should also look at history, give us something to the contrary. And if somebody can find one day authentic historical record bridging from the first century down to the century, if somebody can find something to that effect, I would be glad to be informed. That is, if there is writing you have the first century. That's the time of the apostles. Okay? And what we are asking history to do, we now live in the 21st century. So what we're asking, if there is some historical writing to be found in some of the great libraries of the world that would be in books, in libraries, bookstore, writings from the first century, the time of the apostles, down to our time, pointing out that here are Christians and religious men who wrote and tell about the worship of the church, the state of the church, and all the indications are that head covering was never practiced, it was never believed in. If there is such a person to be found with historical record, then, as I said, I would like to know, because what we are finding out here is that there are Christians and religious men right down, bridging the gap and helping us to understand what Christians believe about the subject that is under consideration. Last week, we started at the first or second century. The Bible is in the first century, and the Bible speaks on the subject. We started in about the second century AD 130. That was Irenaeus. We went on to AD 150 to AD 215. That was Clement of Alexandria in Egypt. We went on to Tertullian. 160 AD to 230 AD. He was from Carthage in North Africa. I remember we look on the fact and read it, and I begin, quote, "For throughout Greece and in certain of its barbaric province, the majority of churches keep their women covered. So let no one ascribe this custom merely to the Gentile custom of the Greeks and barbarians." Continue. Tertullian writing. "The Corinthians themselves understood him," Paul, the Apostle Paul, "to speak in this manner." What manner? That is to speak in the manner of showing that women are to be covered. "For to this very day the Corinthians veil their virgins. So on both sides of the matter the apostle has written with sufficient clarity." In fact, he says quite succinctly, "Every woman." What does every mean if it does not mean every class, every order, every condition, and every age? That was from the African in the person of Tertullian. He was also a great scholar and an able speaker. Before, in fact, there is a little more here. But before we go further, I don't know how many of you have observed I have pointed out here that the two subjects addressed in the book of 1 Corinthians 11 by Paul, they were no other place in Paul's writing addressed again. I have pointed that out. You will not find anywhere in the rest of Paul's writing, supposed to have written 13, 14 books of the New Testament, you will not find anywhere in his writing where the subject of the communion, which is so important, and the subject of the Lord's Supper are dealt with in his writing. Of course, the main consideration where you may not find it is that the subjects, the two subjects dealt with in this one chapter would have been taught by Paul in every congregation that he had anything to do with. But there's something else I want you to be mindful of. You do not find many other subjects in the entire New Testament that is so thoroughly dealt with by any writer. I'm going to ask somebody to explain what I mean, but let me say it again. You do not find any. Well, let me word it the other way. Few. And you have to search. Few subjects, if any, that have been so completely and thoroughly dealt with by the Apostle Paul or by any other apostle as the subject of the communion and head covering. For the expedition of time, I was going to just go on. Brother, sister, Alethea, put in your words what Brother Mitchell was trying to say. Cheryl, Brother Smith.
These two subjects were so important to the early Christians, to the church, that we placed a lot of emphasis on it, spending, as we read in the Bible here, a whole chapter on it, really showing the importance of it, and that it should not be done any, and however they said, however they wanted to do it. For example, the communion, the eating at, or the eat at home. So he was emphasis was showing the correctness of doing it.
You are very much on the point, Brother Smith. Very much on the point. The point is, can anybody here find a subject that the Apostle Paul or any other apostle spend as much time on? I can think of one coming. I can think of one right now, the subject of faith. The subject of faith in the book of Hebrews chapter 11. Take the subject of love. 1 Corinthians chapter 13 is considered the most completely dealt with chapter on the subject of love. Yet, Paul assigned some 16 verses of writing on the subject of head covering, and almost equal amount of verses or time on the subject of the Lord's communion, which is so important. All the other subjects that he dealt with, baptism, Paul deal with baptism all over the place, Romans and Corinthians, Galatians, name it. But probably just one or two or three verses, or four verses, five verses, with the subject of head covering and the Lord's Supper. It was thoroughly dealt with. The point is, for somebody to come up with the idea that Paul was showing why women ought not to cover and men. Women ought to be covered and men ought not to be covered. My God, you can state that in one verse about four different ways. Truly, you can take one verse, you state it one way, and in case they miss it, you state it another way. And that verse still wouldn't be a long verse, stating it three or four ways. But we do not have that in 1 Corinthians 11. What we have is the man going back to creation, showing why the women ought to be covered and the men ought not to. For somebody to come up with something there to imply that all of these verses and Paul's waste-time writing is just to point out to us that there is no need for the women to cover. And I wonder why we take leave of our sense when we are dealing with the Bible. So help me God, I wonder. And, you know, I cannot wait for us to read verse 16. That will be the final verse where people have Paul. They have some terrible drugs now. Truly. Terrible drugs. And these are manufactured by chemists who want to make a lot of money. And then the young people today who are looking for drugs, they are looking for something to lean on. Sometimes they mix these drugs and it's killing them all. Some of the interpretations that truly, no, truly, he was only smoking ganja. If these people are right, you know, but he was taking some of drugs, you know, if they are right. And, you know, my God, brothers and sisters, sometimes when people come up with something, you wonder why they take leave of their senses. Anyway, let's get back to Tertullian. Tertullian, like most of his contemporaries, had a deep concern for modesty. He also stressed veil head for modesty's sake. But he seems to apply the principle with a severity not taught in the New Testament. Everybody understand what I have just read? Tertullian had strong conviction about modesty. But I don't think it's just women, but Christian in general, not going to extremes. And in many cases, he took that conviction in area that what? Area that sometimes get over biblical bounds. Are we all there? We have to make sure that in our eagerness to maintain the New Testament principle and pattern, we do not go beyond the New Testament. Everybody? No man or woman can get more righteous than God. And we must never strive to be more righteous than God. So in our effort to maintain New Testament principle, both as individual and collectively, we must make sure we do our homework. Study the Bible prayerfully. Ask God for understanding and guidance. And secondly, show respect for what the Bible says, making sure you understand what it says. Okay? He also expressed a concern that the veiling be worn consistently out of the assembly as well as in the assembly. That's not what the Bible teaches. Are we all there? Are we all there? Okay. So there are some more on Tertullian, but we are going to move now to another writer. And that is Hippolytus. Hippolytus, sorry, Brother Bramley, Hippolytus, H-I-P-P-O-L-Y-T-U-S, H-I-P-P-O-L-Y-T-U-S, Hippolytus, he lived 170 to 236 A.D. 170 to 286 A.D. So we are moving from the second century to the third century. Hippolytus was a leading elder in the church of Rome near the beginning of the third century. What does it mean when the writer said he was a leading elder? Anybody? Okay, Brother Long comment and Brother Webb. He was a leading elder. He was elder with other elders. But from all indication, his influence so much surpassed the others. And this can, in fact, you usually have this. God did not intend it to be otherwise. While they are all equally elders, are equally apostles, are we all there? Yet you're going to have apostles whose influence sought to stand above the others. Wherever you have two people, you are going to have, depending, their zeal was never meant to be suppressed by God to be on the same level. Their interest in God's work was never men to be suppressed by God to be on the same level. Their interest in knowledge, study, all of these, so you're always going to have where a person's influence makes sometime a person, one person among equals, excel. And this is probably no doubt what is meant here, that he was a leading elder in the church of Rome near the beginning of the 3rd century. I believe there's a passage in the book of Acts chapter 13, the first verse or two, that give you an implication of this sort of thing. You know, so a lot of time, if we are not careful, we... Let me see if it's chapter 13. It's a passage which talks about leading men. Verse 6. The verse that I'm looking for, I think, mention something to the effect about leading men. 15:22. Confirming this, did you say 15? That's right. And what it does there, it pick out certain who were leading men among the others. Peter, until Paul came along, Peter was the leading, most influential apostle. You know, things like that. So, anyway. So, Epaphroditus, quote, and let all the women have their heads covered with an opaque cloth, not with a veil of thin linen, for this is not a true covering. That little part. Okay, I should have pointed this out, but many of you would have seen it by now. You'll notice when I give the quotation or the reading of these ancient writers, it is not modeled or pretty up or curtailed. It's given as they spoke or wrote. What you find is the individual
twists, are bent, are inclination. So you find different writer will, when dealing with the head covering, will say something on the subject which might not be strictly scriptural. The bottom line, of course, all the writers that we are looking in so far, that is writers from the first century down, they are all pointing out that the practice of the church was that women covered. They were telling not only of the practice of the church, but what church leaders then preach and taught. Okay? There is no exception so far. We are now in the third century. The early practices of the early church are described by Hippolytus. Canon 17 of virgins that they should cover their face and their heads. That's additional. Okay? We move on now from the 3rd century to the 4th century. John Chrysostom. I'll spell it. Chrysostom. Chrysostom. That's right. Chrysostom lived 340 to 407 AD. Chrysostom was the great preacher of Antioch. Chrysostom identifies the problem Paul addresses in 1 Corinthians as, that is 1 Corinthians 11, 2 through 16, as, open quotation, their women used to pray and prophesy and veil and with their head bare. That's Chrysostom's interpretation of the passage. I'm not true. Or well, Chrysostom is not true. So let me read that again. The writer here says, Chrysostom identified a problem Paul addressed in 1 Corinthians as their women used to pray and prophesy and veil and with their head bare. Chrysostom, commenting on verse 5, taught that a woman need a separate head covering other than her long hair. Was that plain enough? That's what he taught. That, in effect, her hair was not the covering. She need a separate covering. And listen, open quotation. And if it be given her for a covering, say you, wherefore need she add another covering? You get the drift here? Chrysostom is addressing those who want to debate with him and the need for head covering. So he said, you are saying her hair is given her for a covering, and therefore there is no need for another covering. That's what you are saying. That's not nature only, but also her own will may have a part in her acknowledgement of subjection. What he's saying here, it's not just nature. that shows that she should wear something as God dictates to signify her subjection, but that her knowledge of what God says should also dictate that. For that thou artest to be covered, nature herself, by anticipation, enacted a law. Ad now. ADD. All this, you know, is a conversation of Chrysostom, sort of debating. He said, add now, ADD, add now, I pray, thine own part also, that thou mayest not seem to subvert the very laws of nature, a proof of most insolent rashness, to buffet not only with us, but with nature itself. That is, when you argue that a woman ought not to be covered, you are quarreling both with nature and God's word, and those of us who preach what God's word says. He went on, saying, we are still with Chrysostom, for a man indeed ought not to have his head veiled, for as much as he is the image and glory of God. And he gives you 1 Corinthians 11, verse 7. All what I'm reading, you know, is quotation from the writing of Chrysostom. This again is another cause why the women should be covered, why the woman should be covered. Not only so, so he speaks, because he ought Christ to be his head, ought he not to cover the head? He's talking about the men. But because also he rules over the woman. So it's not only the man ought not to cover because he has his head Christ, but also the Almighty God made him to rule over the woman. For the ruler, when he comes before the king, ought to have the symbol of his rule. As therefore no ruler without military girdle and cloak would venture to appear before him that art the diadem, so neither do thou without the symbol of thy rule. Of which, one of which is not being covered. He still talk about the man. How the man must appear before God. Continue. Chrysostom. It follows that being covered is a mark of subjection and authorities, addressing the women. That being covered tells that you accept God's subjection and God's authority that covering symbolizes. For it induces her to look down and be ashamed and preserve entire her proper virtue. For the virtue and honor of the governed is to abide in his obedience. That is the end of Chrysostom. Live 340 to 400 AD. We move to another ancient writer. In fact, this is not a writer, but a writing. This is the Constitution of the Holy Apostle. Brother Mitchell, was that written by the Apostle? Not at all. Where this writing comes from, Brother Mitchell? It comes from religious men who by the 3rd century, who by the 3rd century put together some what they consider biblical principle that from word handed down by people who knew the apostle, they felt that these were some fundamental principle of the apostle. So this is man-made writing. It is called the constitutions, plural, constitutions of the apostle. It was written between 250 A.D. to 325 A.D. Finally, quote, this is a quotation from the Constitution of the Apostle, written during the time I just stated, 250 A.D. to 325. Start. Finally, let me suggest that there are fragments of the Apostles Paul instructions everywhere scattered throughout his epistles, such as the minute canon concerning the veiling of women in acts of worship. Insisting upon it with a length of argument which in one of the apostles' fathers would be considered childish. If you understand that. That Paul had dealt at such a great length with the subject of women covering that did he say the apostle's father? Let me make sure I get that right. Yes, the apostolic fathers would consider childish. That Paul dealt with the subject of head covering. And no doubt they are referring to 1 Corinthians here, chapter 11. That the apostle's father would consider childish to deal with the subject so long. He also insisted that his tradition is from the Lord. That is, Paul insisted that what he wrote about head covering is from the Lord. And this is a fact. Paul did not invent the subject. That is from the Apostolic Constitution, 250 AD. To 325 AD. What I've just read is the constitution of the Holy Apostle. Now, I'm going to read something else. And this is from the Apostolic Constitution. This is a completely different thing, written at a different time. In fact, the Apostolic, the first one is the Constitution of the Holy Apostle. This one is the Apostolic Constitution, written 390 AD. That is some almost 60 years after the Apostolic Constitution, the Constitution of the Holy Apostle. And this quote now, when you are in the street, cover your head, for by such a covering you will avoid being viewed by idle persons. So this is from the Apostolic Constitution, written 390 AD. We continue. Probably this is the last one or two. Jerome, one of the great church fathers, (clears throat) By this time, from we touch in the 3rd century, you find that men and women were drifting away from what? From New Testament Christianity. It's along this period that little by little Roman Catholicism going to start itself. Roman Catholic Church didn't start yet, so don't misunderstand. Don't go saying Brother Mitchell said that the Roman Catholic Church started from the 3rd century. No, but as powerful church leaders and men of the community, wherever Christianity reached, became members of the church. And because the church, in many cases, did not strong inform leaders, these community powerful men, sometimes they were tribal leaders, they were wealthy landlords, they were political people, and heard Christianity and embraced it, but they were permitted to have their own way. Because in many cases, very important that you get this, because they were powerful men in society, the leaders in the church did not see to it that they grow and develop. Leaders in the church gladly turn over church leadership to them. And many of you know that's how comes. Things like sprinkling for baptism and worshipping Mary, idol worship. It's a community leaders who became members of the church or embrace some form of Christianity. The church lacks strong leadership then, and leaders who respect the New Testament pattern. And these leaders, they come in the church and they have some idea how the church can raise money. And because the church had weak leaders, were ignorant, they adopted. They come in the church and feel that here is something that would do good to the church, and church leaders adopt it. And that's what brought us to where we are today with the hundreds of different churches. That's how it started, you see. So I'm about to read just the last one or two points. Yes, Brother Long.
We use the word AD a lot in religious. Is there
what does AD mean? AD, I usually simplify it. After the death of Christ. That's the simplification. That's the actual word. I think there is a Latin meaning, but it really comes down to after the death of Christ. You know. Mm-hmm. Yes, Brother Love.
Yes, that was what I wanted to find out, because you have to be very careful in using the BC and the AD, because people mix with their language.
BC again.
When you mention about the BC, you have to be specific, tell them what it is.
Yes, BC,
like,
again, simplify before Christ. Before the time of Christ, or before Christ. Well, I was about to make another statement, but let me let that stay. It may come up again. Okay?
Okay.
So, okay. Jerome, 345 to 429. That's Jerome. speaking about Jerome, who lived 345 to 429 AD, it is usual in the monasteries of Egypt and Syria for virgins and widows who have vowed themselves to God and have renounced the world and have trodden underfoot its pleasures, to ask the mothers of their communities to cut their hair. You all follow me with this one? What you gather is by this time, monastery had gotten getting its feet off the ground. And that is where both men and women, at this time you did not have the development of Roman Catholicism. What you have is little fringes of it coming into being. But what you did have by this time is that men and women, especially a lot of young women and women who were widows, who felt so strongly about Christianity that they were abandoning completely anything of the world and committing their lives to the church and what it stands for. And in many cases, the church provide quarters for them. Trodden underfoot its pleasure to ask the mothers of these communities. You have more prominent women who are responsible for these monastery, the female section, to cut their hair. Not that afterward they go about with heads and covered in defiance of the apostles' command. You got this? They ask the mothers responsible for the female section of the monastery to cut their hair. But these young women did not go about with heads and covered in defiance of the apostles' command. That is, not that afterward they go. After they get their hair cut, as they ask the mothers, they did not go about with uncovered head to defy what the apostle says. Understood? Yes, understood. Okay, we are going to stop there. That's about the 5th century. Yes, we are entering the 5th century. There's many more, but we're not going to have the time tonight. We're going to end here. Okay? We have things here from the 8th century, the 11th century, where people like John Knox, what he said, John Calvin, what he said, George Gallipsy, Matthew Henry, John Wesley, all of these wrote on the subject of head covering. And these writings are available to you and me today. Head covering is not something just come up. It's not something that was just mentioned in Corinthians and it was done with. No, sir. We are tracing from that first century right down. what we're going to do probably next week, as some more Sunday morning, is probably let commentators speak how they understand that passage. Church of Christ and denominational theologian. Let them speak. So, what we are doing as we are coming towards wrapping up is giving you a chance to understand that the subject of head covering is spoken about. Men and women wrote about it. Some of them take up verse by verse and tell you exactly what the passage is saying, be it in Greek or in English. So, there is a chance that next week we may go spend a week on just listening to some of the commentators, so that when we get back to the last four verses of the passage, we can just go on. Okay.
I'm not sure if you're saying you're going to skip some of those that you mentioned. I think it's important for us to look at some of the later ones.
Very good. Very
because one of the arguments put forward is that it was something of culture. So when we look at those that would have been close to the days of the apostles, they could argue.
Yes, that was culture.
It was the same culture.
But
the culture had not yet.
Farther and farther away.
That's right.
Okay, so that's a good point. So therefore, next week, take the mic to Sister Tyrell. I think she wants to make a point. Next week, we are going to run to, just a minute, I stop at the 5th century. We are going to look at Augustine. Almost everybody heard about St. Augustine. So we are going to pick up on him. 435, 430. We are going to look at the 8th century. We are going to look at the 11th and 12th century. May I? This is interesting. In the 11th and 12th century, one of the first persons we're going to quote is a modern hat designer, Madeleine Ginsburg. She was a hat designer, very famous, who had done research on women headgear. She didn't do her research in the interest of religion, but we are going to learn something from her. We are going to look on John Knox, 1505 to 1572. We are going to look on John Calvin, 1509 to 1564. We are going to look on what George Gillespie, 1613 to 1640. That. We are going to look on what Matthew Henry says. He's also a Bible commentary writer. 1662 to 1714. We are going to look on John Wesley, 1703 to 1799. We are going to look on Henry Alford, 1810 to 1871. We are going to look on Frederick Gaddett, 1812 to 1900. Thank you, Brother Webb. You're right. Sister Tyrell.
Yeah. When you spoke about the women who got their hair cut and they were from the monastery, I reflect about the nuns and wonder if that is where you...
Well, it's directly related, because what the quotation I quote here, that was about the 5th century, is, and I said it, is the emergence of Roman Catholicism did not just on a sudden burst itself on the world. The pick up, let's say, this congregation, they have leadership that either don't know the Bible, don't respect it, or have great respect for political or social leader. So, a political leader get converted and him have some religious idea and him mention it. And it was adopted. Infant baptism, sprinkling for baptism, all of these were adopted by Roman Catholicism from heathen practices. So when you read about the cutting ear and the, you're right. This is the Roman Catholicism as we know it today. And at that time it was not Roman Catholicism. But the belief of the Roman Church as we see today was creeping into Christianity, taking its shape into Christianity. And one by one, this year it might be something. Next year it might be something else. So it comes from the monastery, the nuns and that. But this was part of the beginning of it. Okay? Okay? Thank you.